Thanks to the Xfinity 10G network, my little brother's friends won't leave our house. When I was their age, internet with basically no interruptions was a pipe dream.
You sound like my grandpa.
Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
You're listening to Their Only Stories, a podcast that celebrates storytelling and the writers behind those stories. This episode, Country House by Stuart Roach.
So, if you want to follow your elf, they're going to take you straight up the stairs, and then you'll get to meet my husband, Mr. Claus. Thank you. Yes, young man, what can I do for you?
Are the presents going to be shit?
I'm sorry?
The presents upstairs, are they going to be shit? Because we were at Santa in another one of these country houses last weekend, and the presents were absolutely...
Oi!
It's okay, friendly elf. I can handle this.
Your parents are waiting for you. Outside.
No one asked you.
You're holding everybody up.
You're not even a real elf. My big sister said most of you lot are actors who can't even get a job in a panto.
Move it.
Cheeky little bollocks. I could totally get a job in panto.
Well, now, let's not lose the run of ourselves.
I could. No, you're right, I couldn't. And the presents are shit.
I know. Brutal. They got them all in the €2 shop.
Have you anything to drink? My head is bouncing.
Probably shouldn't have had that 7th pint last night then, should you?
And whose poxy idea was that?
You didn't take much convincing. Here, drink this.
Thank Christ.
Right, I can't stay long. That Rory will be back any minute.
I don't think I can handle him again. He's such a pain in the hole.
Ah, come on. We're nearly there.
Can we please get chips later on?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Right, I gotta go.
Listen. Oh, what are the names of all the reindeers?
What?
Santa's poxy reindeers. I can't remember the last one. I need it for my story when the kids arrive. I have Dasher.
Uh-huh.
Dancer and Prancer.
Mm-hmm.
Vixen.
Mm-hmm.
Cupid. Donner and Blitzen.
Can you not just Google it?
My phone is dead.
Jesus. Comet.
Comet, that's it. Comet, what a stupid name for a reindeer.
They're all stupid names. Oh, shite.
Adam, you're needed upstairs.
Right.
Immediately.
Kara, did I just see you on your phone?
Absolutely not, Rory. That would be against the rules.
Yes. Yes, it would be.
It's dead anyway. My phone.
I see. Could you tidy up before the next group arrive? Which should be soon, actually.
Tidy up? Like, now?
If it isn't too much trouble. That looks better already. Thank you. I'll continue my rounds.
Rounds? You're not a doctor, you melt. Just finishing up now, Rory. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was someone else. Is it just you two, or...?
It's just the two of us, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, the groups are normally much bigger, and you're supposed to have an elf with you to show you around? Some sort of health and safety thing. But it doesn't matter. Come this way. Now, what's your name?
William.
Oh, I don't get many Williams. So, William, are you looking forward to Christmas?
Of course.
Oh, of course. Silly question, really. Who doesn't look forward to Christmas?
No one.
No one. But do you know who thinks Christmas is hard work?
The elves?
The elves do find it hard work, yes. But also Santa's reindeer. They're absolutely flaked out by Stephen's Day. Do you know their names?
Yes.
And you've probably heard the story about the little known, slightly annoying reindeer, Comet, who got lost and nearly ruined Christmas.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Oh, thank Christ. Well, as you know, I won't bore you by going over old ground. Now, I can tell, just by talking to you, that you have been a very good boy this year. Would I be right? Would Mummy agree with that? Would you agree with that, Mummy?
Yes, he's been very good.
Excellent. I'll make sure Santa knows that. So, tell me, what have you asked him for, William? A lot of children are looking for PlayStations or Xboxes. Well, you're probably a bit young for a phone. Maybe a football jersey? Bikes are always popular.
Go on, William. It's fine.
Yes, a bike. I asked Santa for a bike.
Well, I'd say you've got a pretty good shot at getting that.
You really think so?
I do.
Thank you.
Now, if you head back out of this room and straight up the stairs, there'll definitely be an elf up there who'll bring you up to see Mr. Claus.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure. He's a lovely kid, and believe me, not all of them are. We had this one little Actually, never mind. He has this lovely innocence about him. It's unusual.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Claus.
You're most welcome. Be careful on that bike.
I will, and you be careful on the road home tonight.
Oh, Kara! I almost forgot about you. The last group didn't show up. There's a problem on the M1 or something. And because they were the last, we're finished for the day.
Hold on.
Don't worry, you'll be paid the full amount.
Well, there was a group. Well, group might be pushing it. There was a woman and her son just a minute ago.
I don't think so.
No, there was. The boy's name was William.
There couldn't have been. I've been out the front the whole time. No group arrived.
But...
Can you make sure your costume is dropped back into the office on Monday and washed, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
You right?
Just give me 1 minute.
Deadly to finish up early, eh? Hey, Kara? You okay?
Yeah.
You don't look it. No offense.
I'm grand. Come on.
Yeah, let's get out of here before Rory gets back.
Jesus.
What?
Come here. Look at this picture.
What am I looking at?
That's William and his mother.
I'm sorry, who now?
They were just here. I did my whole Mrs. Claus spiel and everything for them. Well, most of it. William wanted a bike.
And when were they here?
Just now, I told you.
These two, in this picture, they were here just now. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Jesus.
Jesus what?
Will you promise me you'll stay off the booze for a while?
What are you talking about?
Look at the date on the picture. Well, what does it say?
1924.
Exactly. 1924. So there's no way William and his mum could have been here just now, is there?
Adam, I am telling you.
Cara.
I know what I saw.
Listen, you're wrecked. It's my fault. I'll drop you back. We'll get chips and Macari's, and then you need to go to bed for about 3 days, okay?
But I know...
But nothing, Cara. Come on. The train's leaving the station.
I'm coming. I know what I saw. I know what I saw.
Thank you very much.
That was Country House, starring Anna Connolly Reid, Philip Arneil, Kevin McMahon, Niamh McPhillips, Breida Gallagher, and Tommy Roach. This episode was produced by Kieran Gallagher.
Hello and welcome to There Only Stories, a podcast that celebrates storytelling, the writers that create those stories. My name is Emily Gilman-Murphy and I'm an author and playwright.
And my name is Kieran Gallagher. I'm a theatre director and sound designer.
And today our guest is playwright, actor and all-round horror expert Stuart Roach.
Welcome to the show.
That's a big build-up. Now. I don't know if I'm going to be able to live up to that, but anyway.
So I thought that probably the best place to start off is because the theme of our first season of Their Only Stories is ghost stories. So what do you love about ghost stories?
I've been asked this question before. I think for me, I started to get interested in ghost stories when I was very young. My parents were from Kildare and we lived in Dublin, so we would go down to Kildare pretty much every weekend. And I would stay with my grandmother and my uncle, who was also my godfather. They would babysit. So my mum and dad would go out and, you know, try to pretend they weren't so tired from having children. And they'd have a few drinks and then... So I'm pretty sure, sometimes you kind of think, am I misremembering or am I kind of romanticising it? But I've kind of done a little bit of research and I think the timeline adds up. They used to show a lot of horror movies on the Saturday night on BBC and then on ITV, or it might have been HTV then in Kildare, I don't know. Hammer used to have a TV show on a Saturday night. So my mum and dad are down in the pub having a few drinks. My uncle and my gran would watch horror movies and they had a bungalow. So there was a big long corridor.
Oh, okay.
And my room was then at the end of the corridor and the living room was then at the far end. So I would sneak out and I'd kind of have a little look and see what was going on. And I'd see Dracula being sort of staked and I'd see Frankenstein being created. And they kind of caught me and they tried to put me back to bed. But then I think they kind of knew that this was something that I... Because they were interested in it, I was interested in it. So after a few months, I think they said, sure, look, he's watching them anyway. He might as well be watching them in the room with us. So I think that they kind of sort of subliminally or subconsciously remind me of my childhood. And this was a happy time. You know, I enjoyed kind of going down to my grandparents or my grandmother, my uncle. So I think that's, but particularly ghost stories. I mean, gore is something that I've never been particularly, it's not really done anything for me. I think I watched, I can't remember, 8 or 9 seasons of The Walking Dead. And I think if you've stuck with it for that long, I think I've seen literally every type of death now of a zombie or human.
Nothing shocks me anymore.
But a good ghost story still will get me. Do you know what I mean? And I think and so I would prefer. I did like the Hammer stuff. I particularly like Christopher Lee. But if there was ever a ghost, you know, the Hammer TV shows, the ghost ones are the ones I would have gravitated towards.
Yeah.
There's a famous one about they picked up a hitchhiker wearing this yellow Mac, which I think Stephen King might have robbed for, for it. But that was great. Yeah, that was really good. And so from an early point, I think I don't know if I believe in ghosts, but I embrace the possibility that there might be something afterwards. And I do think that certain, do you know, because I'm not a particularly religious person, but I think as I get older, I start to wonder a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
I think as an artist, it's a lovely romantic idea that, like, even if you don't necessarily believe in ghosts, like, that there's something else out there.
Yeah, I think so, and I think, you know, I've always been drawn towards those kind of stories, like M.R. James and people like that, and you know, The Turn of the Screw was a perfect book, and I don't know if I think I mentioned it to you guys when we were recording the drama. The 1980s version of The Woman in Black just got released.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. Do you know, and I think that's, to me, like, I sort of deviate all the time. Somebody asks what your favourite book or your favourite film is, and I think at the moment The Woman in Black is one of my favourite books. Do you
it's
know?
Kind of an impossible question. What's your favourite?
It is, yeah. It's like, well, on a Thursday it's this, on a Friday it's this. But I think The Woman in Black is a perfect novel, I think, because it's, and you look at it, so it's like 200 pages long, you know, but she gets so much in it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's brilliant, you know, and I think the best stage adaptation of a novel, my favorite stage adaptation, the play is brilliant as well.
It's so interesting that you're kind of saying you don't gravitate to the gore, and that's, and then Woman in Black is one of your favorite things, because that is a perfect example of horror that's not gore. It's all very psychological, and it's very mystic almost, you know, mysterious.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's, you know, and the way you're drip fed the information, and you begin to find out the reason why she's there. And in some ways, she's actually almost, she becomes a tragic character towards the end. She, you know, she's been this malevolent spirit, and then you find out why. look, if you haven't read The Woman in Black or seen it,
it's
1983 or something, it was written, so come on, hurry up.
Oh, it's so wonderful. But no, totally. Like, it's one of my favourites too, and I think we'd be the same in terms of gore and the mysterious kind of side of horror, and that's what, and ghost stories, that's what kind of attracts us to them. And have you had any of your own spooky experiences that have inspired your work?
No, but my aforementioned grandmother was somebody who very much believed in ghosts.
Okay.
And I think so. She would tell me stories about when she was a kid. Myself and Emily, we were joking. We're partially Protestant, which I think we're allowed to say. And I think Stuart was an unusual name in Dublin in the 70s and the 80s when I was growing up. But I was named after my great uncle, who I never met, who accidentally killed himself when he was very young.
There's a story.
Yeah, he tipped boiling water all over himself when he was a little baby. So my grandmother was convinced that she'd seen a banshee the day before. And then they moved, and then she kept encountering this spirit when they moved, I think it was from Limerick up to Port Leash and then to Newbridge. And she was convinced that this spirit had followed the family in these different places. So she was always quite wary or she was really worried that she might see one when I was down there, because I was her first grandson. Yeah. So she was always on the lookout. So I haven't myself, but somebody that was very close to me, she was good. And she wasn't, you know, she wasn't a quack. She was a perfectly normal person, but she believed that this stuff was real. Yeah. So.
And you know what? I've obviously heard of banshees before, but excuse my ignorance, but what's the exact kind of meaning of a banshee? I know it's a ghostly kind of figure, but
I think usually the story is that if you see a banshee wailing, there's going to be a death in your family in the near future.
That's the story I remember hearing as a kid as well,
which is terrifying.
Terrifying.
It's like, not only am I a ghost, but I'm also going to be...
Somebody
in your family is going to die.
You first, you'll realize why later on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you're at the funeral, you're like, oh yeah, that was
And funny. Wasn't it a kind of... like this story that was created by owls, barn owls, because they were these silent, I remember, animal obsessed. I remember hearing the way their wings are designed. They're silent animals, and they're this ghostly white. And often people would have seen barn owls, because there would have been, back in the day, a lot of them in Ireland, and they thought they were banshees. They thought these were these spirits coming in.
Okay.
But yeah,
I haven't heard that one now.
Yeah, and I know the animal part.
They make, they probably make some very strange. Like we have a couple of foxes that I feed. my neighbors don't want to hear me. The cat. But when they're hungry, when they're wet, like foxes make noises that don't make sense when you look at them as animals. You're going, that creature shouldn't be producing that sound.
No, you're spot on.
A fox. An interaction with a fox is probably one of the very pure horror moments I had as a child. I remember my parents have this lovely house out in Enniskerry and out in Wicklow, and I was walking from one door to, they had a front door and a back door, so it was a very short walk. I was walking from the front door to the back door. I can't remember why. I was probably being belligerent and bad child, and I came across this fox, and as you said, it made this screeching sound because it was probably terrified of me, and to this day it haunts me.
Really?
Like, it's
yeah. But I mean, can you imagine if you, like, because I'm not from the country, but any of the time you're down, a friend of ours has a house in Leitrim, and it's right in the smack bang, and you know, it's beautiful. But at night time, when you know, you might sit out for sort of a drink in the back, you know, you're just like, this, what could that possibly have been? It's like, what was that? Okay, let's go inside quickly and make sure the shotgun is loaded. You know?
It's like, it's okay, Stuart, just come in, we'll watch horror movies, we'll comfort you. It's fine.
No, comedy. I want to watch comedy.
Well, we had a very fun experience recording the audio drama for you, but I think one of the funnest part was your son. He was just brilliant. And do you think he's inherited your love for scary stories or your love for arts in general?
He definitely, like, he does watch, he very quickly sort of caught on to Scooby-Doo. He loved Scooby-Doo when he was a kid. So I used to love reading Scooby-Doo from when he was a kid. Sorry, when he was much younger. He just actually threw on some that we'd recorded the other day. Purely by chance, there's a Scooby-Doo, I think it's from either the early 80s or the late 70s, that Vincent Price did the voice. Vincent Price was like this okay. He was the character that tied this season together. And it was only lasted for one season.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was on RTE Junior or something one of the days, and he taped it. And he goes, "Dad, that guy," because I have a signed photograph of Vincent Price on the wall, which I imagine is probably fake, but anyway, but I just put it in. But he goes, "The guy on the wall was in Scooby Doo," and I was like, "What?" Because yeah, the guy, but they remade Scooby Doo, and there's a Vincent Price character, so I was like, "Ah, it must be just him." He goes, "No, it's the one from, it's really old," and I went down, and it was the incredibly rare Vincent Price Scooby-Doo. And it's brilliant. It's the cheesiest, most ridiculous. It's exactly what you would imagine.
Is he playing
himself? Yeah, he's a very person himself. I love Vincent Price, but it's brilliant. So Vincent Price Scooby-Doo. So I think, and like he liked The Nightmare Before Christmas and he liked The Corpse's Bride. Yeah. So I think he seems to like Tim Burton. So he liked Tim Burton. He liked the we watched Edward Scissorhands, I think. You got to be careful with Tim Burton because he kind of goes, so it'll be a while before he gets to see Sleepy Hollow, for example. But I think so, yeah, he likes, he has a playful look in his eye when he says it tells me the ghosts aren't real and these are all silly stories and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and, I think so. And like his older brother, again, would have liked similar kind of things to him. And he does like a good ghost story. Like he likes, we watched The Devil's Backbone recently, the Guillermo del Toro, the one set in the Spanish, one of his ones set in the Spanish War, and he loved that. It's a brilliant ghost story as well, which is unusual because the ghost is actually is not malevolent in it, even though you think he is.
Yeah,
which is it was kind of a rarity to see that. So I think so. I think he will. I think his real love is basketball, though. So I don't think if that doesn't work out for him, maybe he'll pursue a career in the arts.
I do remember a memory of a child of really liking Space Jam,
which was on Netflix.
Was it?
Yeah. They around the same time they started showing The Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls documentary, which is brilliant.
But that would make sense.
They also got Space Jam.
But two very different stories.
So I watched that with my little sister. I think she wore out the videotape would have been on it. It basically just disappeared. They watched it so many times. So I was watching. I was like, I haven't seen this in about 25 years, and yet I know every single line.
Yeah, I think every kid, like including myself as a white girl who is 5'5", had dreams of being a basketball player after that movie.
Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, no. So yeah, we'll see. But no, he does enjoy them, and he did have a good time.
And yeah, and you kind of told us that your story was inspired by Ralph Harman Castle. What was it about that kind of location that you felt worked for this?
I think it was. I live not too far from Ralph Harman Castle, and I grew up in Dundrum, so mm-hmm. that and the Hellfire Club would have been. You know, when you're young, you kind of seek out haunted places.
Yeah.
So they would have been mentioned. I think one of the things that inspired the story was last year at Christmas time we went to a Santa. Experience in a place. I think it was in Meath. I can't remember the name of it. It was one of those old country houses.
Yeah,
and I remember just kind of sitting back and or sort of letting the madness unfold. All these screaming children running around, and then I was kind of looking at the location, and it seems like quite a lot of these places. Obviously, it's something that they need to do, and you know they're not in the same hands that they would have been 120 odd years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sort of found it slightly incongruous that you had this beautiful old country house that has now been taken over by Santa and Mrs. Claus and all these elves and all these kids. And then there was a moment where everybody sort of cleared out of the room, and we were at the back, and then you had that mm-hmm. little bit of quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl who had kind of greeted us, she kind of just sat down and sort of was relaxed. I remember kind of thinking, this is an unusual, that sort of, that tableau or that you know, mental image was, mm-hmm. was quite strong. There's mm-hmm. something there, like after mm-hmm. you've had all this madness and then suddenly, and it is this old country house that this girl is kind of going to be on her own for like half an hour or 20 minutes before the next group comes in.
Which is actually crazy. Just when I was making the piece, actually, that's exactly what I imagined as well. I imagine this very like empty kind of space in that moment where it all clears out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, yeah, I felt it was a very strong image as well.
Yeah, and you're kind of, so you've got this sort of, you know, all this, you know, the noise that only 25 children can make at Christmas time. and then it's gone. And then you're left.
Yeah.
And it's like, whew, okay.
Yeah.
And I just kind of thought that, you know, if you had shown the owners of this house in 1890, mm-hmm. what would happen, you know, because you've got most of these were sort of landed gentry, and there's got the Anglo-Irish, and you've got the whole thing about a lot of those houses were burnt by the IRA and mm-hmm. the War of Independence. And I think, so you've got this turmoil, but I just kind of thought at Christmas time you could have, it might be interesting that family who owned it back then wanted to see Santa as well, do you know? And I just thought that might be kind of unusual. Then there's a little bit about you need to be careful, do you know, and I kind of left it just ambiguous as to when you get, because I think, you know, you're going to get a ghost from 1895. They have to give you a little bit of a warning. It can't be all happy. Yeah. Yeah,
and there's also something about Christmas and ghost stories that just really work together, because it's so interesting you brought up Woman in Black, because I think that was originally a Christmas show.
It was,
The stage production, I mean. I don't know about the short story.
The ITV, the one that got re-released recently, that was shown on Christmas Eve. So it was, yeah, and I think I think Charles Dickens, he kind of re-kickstarted Christmas, and I think you've got A Christmas Carol. I think that's where a lot of it comes from.
Yeah,
and then you've got M.R. James, obviously his he used to tell those stories to his students on Christmas Eve, so they'd have a glass of brandy and sit down, and M.R. James would sort of knock out the warning from the curious or whatever, and then I think they persuaded him to write them down, so that's where that tradition came from. So you know, the stuff like I would have would have watched a lot of the BBC Christmas, you know, that, and they've all been re-released, thankfully. Now BFI have really re-released all of them, so some of those are superb, you know. So there's, you know, you've got, I think what I like about it is that you've got Halloween, but then it doesn't necessarily, there's a build up towards this one night, and you're going, yeah, but then if you really want to, you can kind of stay in sort of ghost mode up until you get another six or 7 weeks out of it if you want to.
Yeah,
you know,
so. Well, there's a mutual friend of all three of us that keeps his Halloween decorations up until Christmas, so it's definitely a theme. And everyone's nodding, everyone knows who we're
talking about. Peter, sorry, Peter.
What was I going to say? And it's really interesting that you were talking about Christmas and Ralph Harman Castle, because even when I was Googling it and I was doing a bit of research and the ghost stories associated with it, the one that kept coming up was about ghost, a dog.
The
ghost.
Dog, yeah.
And yeah. That's at Christmas time. Yeah, that's
true. Yeah, it was the frozen lake, wasn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah. So as story goes, in the winter of 1840, an ice skating party took place on the pond in the grounds of Rathfarn Castle. And then among us, the skaters, was a man who had a lovely Labrador dog. And apparently the ice broke beneath him and he dropped in, and the Labrador very bravely jumped in to save him, but they both died. And now apparently the dog haunts the castle. And I have to say, like, I read a lot of ghost stories, but the idea of a dead dog really upset me.
Probably explains all the foxes in Rathfarnham then.
Yeah. that and me feeding them dog food every night. But I heard that was the second story, because I heard the one about the girl who was in the little room.
This is a terrible story.
It's terrible because it's kind of believable as well.
Yeah,
like,
I remember,
I heard this story. So as I did this research, these stories don't necessarily have names, so I kind of gave them names. Do you want to know what I called this particular story? Is Men Are Idiots.
Yeah, that's probably.
And the concept is that there was a young woman that had two lovely suitors, and they decided that the logical way to sort this out, instead of, you know, giving her free choice and will over her future life, they'd lock her in a room and then have a duel. And they ended up killing each other, and the poor woman died in the room. But the point I'd like to go back to, why did they lock her in the room? Were they afraid she'd run away from both of them?
That's
a very good question.
Yeah, sometimes these things don't take, you can't scratch them too much.
They sound romantic, yeah, but then deeper, then it's just, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Tommy, who was the young boy in the show, their school does tours of Rathfarn Castle, and he said that the dog one doesn't, the castle itself don't seem to, they don't push the dog story that much.
No.
They push
it's the sad.
Yeah, it is, but it's also more believable. But he'd said something interesting to me, to the point where I had to go and check, and he said because he's always asked me about haunted places, and so he explained to him about the Helfer Gubble, but I told him about Loftus Hall. And he came back, and after he'd done the tour, and he said, oh, it's the girl who was locked in the room. And he said, I think that place in Wexford that you said is very haunted, I think there might be a link between that and Rathfarnham Castle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, it's the first I've ever heard of it. So Loftus, who owned Rathfarnham Castle, I think he was like the grandfather or the great uncle of...
Yeah, I came across this too. Adam Loftus.
Yes.
Yeah.
So look, if you have the name Loftus, right, is that it? You're just in league with the devil, is that
you're
it?
You're just cursed. Exactly. Yeah. you made a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So that really got... We were down in Wexford one time, and I had never been... I didn't know where Loftus Hall was.
Yeah.
And this was around the time it was still locked. And we were driving down.
It wasn't open to the public.
And so there's the lighthouse down there. Is it?
Oh, there is a lighthouse down
there. Is it Malinhead or Mizzen? I can never remember. Whichever one is down in Wexford.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, the famous. That you can see from the place. Yeah.
So we were driving down because we were in that neck of the woods to see it. And my partner, she's not remotely. She would ghost, absolute nonsense. And she sort of turns to me and said, "Do you feel that?" And I went, "Yeah, absolutely, I feel it." So we were driving on the road. And we looked across and we could see Loftus Hall in the distance. And we must have been, I'd say the closest we were was 1,000 metres.
Okay.
And both of us felt this force emanating. Yeah. And I'm genuinely not joking.
Yeah.
And whatever about me, but she, Leslie, would rubbish.
Yeah.
And she was the person who went, do you? And I went, absolutely, yes, I do. Yeah. And then it was like, what? And then we sort of got down and we asked somebody, and they said, oh yeah, that was Loftus Hall. I was like, what? But that was like, oh my God. I don't know if you've ever been down there, but it's...
I have, when I was very young, yeah. I just in the car from a safe distance, but it's a very imposing building.
It really is. I mean, I genuinely got far more freaked out there than I ever had up in the Hellfire Club, for example. Because I'm from sort of Dundrum Volunteers, so the Hellfire Club was something that was kind of always in our childhood. So, around 11 or 12, you'd be dared to go up and camp there for the night or whatever. But I didn't. I've never experienced anything the way that I did, and like have stood in the Hellfire Club, whereas Loftus Hall was at least a kilometre away. It was scaring the bejesus out of me in a car driving away from it. Like, that's how scary I am. I can scare you when you're leaving.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Like, oh yeah, we went. Like, I'm an absolute pansy. We went to the Hellfire Club with my partner, and we went for a walk with the dog, and he went inside and had a walk around and all that, and went up to the second level to take pictures, and he was like, "Oh, do you want to go in? I'll take some pictures." I was like, no, we probably shouldn't bring the dog in. There'll be grass on the ground. He goes, oh, I'll mind the dog. No, I'm good. And I'd like to think I'm brave, but no.
Oh my gosh. We ask a few questions about the writing process.
Yes, you go ahead.
So, the script was originally a short film, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, which depending on how this is received, it may or may not. It may go back to my drawer. It may... After I had visited Santa in Meath, I'd had that idea that this could be something that would, and I was kind of looking for a little sort of a 5 minute, 5 to sort of 7 minute thing where, and I figured as well that you could probably out of season rent a country house for fairly reasonable rate for a day, especially one that might have been down on its luck. You know, you might, that was so, but it never got past the stage of me actually ringing up and going, "Hi, can I rent your country house?" So it had been there, and then obviously with what happened in the world, sort of making a short film became, you know, akin to climbing Mount Everest. Yeah. But it was an idea that had stayed with me because I think I just kind of went, there's something that I could use here, do you know? So yeah. when you guys asked me, I just kind of went, I think it could work, you know, for audio.
Yeah.
So that was, but it kind of came from that. I don't know about you, but I find sometimes that there could be a moment where you see just an image or you hear something, or there's just a sort of a sense that it can be one thing that then sort of sparks all these other things that then sort of sometimes fall quickly into place, or the times don't fall into place at all. And there are other times that it just doesn't work. You kind of go, no, actually, I thought there was something there, but there actually isn't, or there isn't for me. But this one, I think, sort of stayed with me because I did like that contrast between, you know, the old house, and then you've got the modernity of what's become Christmas here. Mm-hmm. And then you go back to the quiet when it could well be you're back in 1900, whatever. So that's where it came from. So I felt, you know, I think obviously audio and short film, the visual sort of side of things, but it was an easy enough transition. I think it was, you know, the way it felt, like, it's very easy for me to say, but if, you can be the judge of how easy a transition that was. Yeah, you can tell us, this guy is talking absolute nonsense. It felt that it was working, and it was, which I always find as well, and I think sometimes I forget this, and it's only recently I realized this. A lot of the time, if you're enjoying writing the thing, I think that will come across. Yeah. And I think I've kind of been easier on myself about that lately. So I really did enjoy very much writing this. Yeah. I was happy with sticking with it because hopefully, as I said, it might become a short film down the line, but it might not. You know, who knows the way things are going. But I'm glad I got. It got some kind of a life, do you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah. No, and it's totally like, I can see those kids, and I think it's also something that's very relatable because I think everybody's maybe not necessarily worked in a Santa house, but like I've worked in kind of promo work where you have to work with kids that are high on sugar and the stressfulness of it all. It's very relatable. And then, like you said, going from that high intensity to the kind of quiet and the slightly unnerving moment, and it's just...
Yeah,
it's something that, because I think everybody has this idea that ghosts is a surreal image that's not really realistic, but actually we've all experienced some sort of unsettling feeling at some point in our lives.
Yeah, no, totally. And what I loved as well was the fact that it was a benevolent horror piece as opposed to a...
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing malicious about the presence that appears. It's just wanted a present, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Absolutely. Yeah, that, and it's unusual for me because most of the times my protagonists, something untoward will happen to them. most of the time. So
a character in Stuart's writing, run for your life.
You don't want to be the lead in my stuff. I think that the likes to say the Devil's Backbone, The Changeling, which is a brilliant film. Mm-hmm. Again, you find out towards the end, I think, that the spirit was actually trying to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not what you felt was happening all along, and I just kind of liked the idea of these people kind of going, you know, this is still our house in a certain way, and it is still mm-hmm. Christmas, and mm-hmm. this little boy wants to say, I want a bike, mm-hmm. And there's a kind of an innocence about that, but also, you know, mm-hmm. the fact that he does say, be careful on the road. you gotta have a little, you know, just a wee bit of.
That's just something you learned in school.
Exactly. Yeah.
You gotta scare people. It's a healthy scare. But yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for chatting to us, Stuart. Thank you so much for letting us use your work and make it into hopefully an enjoyable story for our listeners. We only want to hear from the people that enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, we're sorry.
I think it sounds great.
Yeah, exactly.
Despite the fact I'm the one working on it, but I think it sounds great.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah,
thank
yeah.
you for as I said, thank you for letting me give this piece a little life, and you know, I'm delighted with how it's turned out. So thanks very much.
Amazing.
Thank you. Great.
This episode was presented by Emily Gilmore Murphy, with sounds and editing by Kieran Gallagher. Their Only Stories is produced by Rise Productions in association with the Headstuff Podcast Network and funded by the Arts Council of Ireland. For more, check out our website, riseproductions.com. Thank you for listening.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Thanks to the Xfinity 10G network, my little brother's friends won't leave our house. When I was their age, internet with basically no interruptions was a pipe dream.
You sound like my grandpa.
Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas.
Did you see my little brother's friends have been camped out at our place for 2 days straight.
Three.
It's because of the Xfinity 10G network. Internet that can handle a house full of screens at once, with like basically no interruptions. And it's only getting faster. When I was their age, internet like this was a pipe dream.
You sound like my grandpa.
Please go home.
Introducing the next generation 10G network, only from Xfinity. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas.